good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. As our planet continues to experience an escalating climate crisis, what should be at the forefront of Malaysia's climate agenda this year? Joining us on the show today to offer their perspectives on aligning Malaysia's climate priorities through a fair and equitable approach, we have on the show Koo Wei Yang, who is a research associate at Khazanah Research Institute. He recently authored a working paper titled Climate Policy and Equitable Approach. Wei Yang, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I want to discuss your paper. It argues clearly identifying what constitutes an equitable share of climate action. And I want to discuss that further. Could you help elaborate on what you think the key principles are that should be guiding a fair governance model when we think about addressing climate challenges? What would we think about when we take into consideration diverse national circumstances?
Thank you, Melissa. So for a global climate effort actually should be guided by the equity principle that has already been enshrined in international agreements such as the UNFCCC and the Paris Agreement, based on the common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities. And this means that an international governance model for a fair global burden sharing require the differentiation of effort among countries based on the responsibility of causing the problem and the capacity of each country in solving the problem. And climate change impacts in developing countries with low responsibilities and capabilities more than developed countries who are primarily responsible for causing the problem. And we also have to kind of recognize that there are unequal international financial and trade regime that is a result of the colonial history, which can impede implementation now. So as developing countries like Malaysia has the right to pursue sustainable development, and we are entitled to transfer our financial and technology research the resources to help us achieve that. Yes.
Right. Could you elaborate more on where you see Malaysia when we think about ensuring that burdens and the benefits of climate action are distributed fairly? Where does Malaysia kind of sit on that scale?
So we did a little bit of a comparison between developing and developed countries. We chose Indonesia, Thailand, and USA as countries that is going to be stand in for the peer comparisons. And we see that Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia all have committed and set targets that are above what their fair share ought to be using the climate equity reference framework that is developed by Stockholm Environment Institute that takes into account of the cumulative emissions as a proxy for responsibility, as well as the GDP per capita as a proxy for financial capacity. And based on that, we compare it to developing country like USA, which has shown to terribly aiming below what their fair share should be. Yeah. So based on that result, we find that United States should be at least reaching net zero before 2030. But this is recognized to be technically and politically unfeasible. So in view of that, developed countries has a lot more responsibility to transfer resources to developing countries who have already aimed above what their fair share should be.
Okay, so we're aiming a lot higher than our kind of emissions, our contribution to emissions globally. Can we talk a little bit about that? When we think about, we often use the phrase a just transition when it comes to climate change. What specific policies have you identified that align with the principles of equity that would be considered a just and successful transition for the Malaysian context, given, as you've just said, we've set targets that are far beyond our fair share?
Yes. So in terms of making transition just, there are principles in what we identify for policy measures that can be equitable. So first, we all of the climate policy measures that should identify the distributional impacts within Malaysia towards different groups. And we also need to take into consideration of fairness in international burden sharing. So for example, the goals, the climate goals should adhere to what we what is fair among countries, and the policies themselves should also contribute to effective achievement of global climate objectives. And to ensure that transition is just, we need to look at policies that can potentially lead to distributional impacts, while keeping in mind the impacts of climate change itself has also distributional consequences. And for example, we have argued that market-based mitigation policies like carbon tax, like consumption tax, is shown to be regressive to lower income groups, and poorer households also face higher difficulties in transitioning. So the equity impact of this policy should therefore be scrutinized.
Right. And I mean, that's a good point. If I just may jump in here very quickly, that's true that climate policies often involve trade-offs. So when we think about distributional consequences, how do we ensure that that burden of climate action is distributed fairly among different sectors of society so that they're not disproportionately impacted by climate policy?
So in terms of trade-off, when we want to think of policies within the country, subnational policies, because of the history of our development, we can sort of see that energy sector, especially the oil and gas sector, will be the most responsible in terms of emissions. And by that logic, they should bear the most burden for solving it. But we also have to consider the role of energy sector in providing public revenue. Our current petroleum-related revenue makes up around a quarter of government revenue, and which goes back into public spending capacities that is going to be able to fund the transition and also feed back into payments for energy subsidy. So it won't be sustainable as global transition potentially destabilizes that source. But our high energy subsidy also reveals that our energy consumption to income ratio of our lower income group is high. And this is partly the reason why the government is doing subsidy rationalization. So the whole issue is interconnected and highly complex. Therefore, it is important to understand climate change problem holistically rather than looking at just one aspect of it to balance out these trade-offs. It involves a lot of cross-agency, cross-jurisdictional planning.
Yeah, well, we seem to understand the holistic nature of that, and we've got several kind of national roadmaps that frameworks that have been launched. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the role of legislation. Does legislation play a role in addressing these concerns, in ensuring an equitable approach to the way climate action is implemented?
Legislation is certainly important, but we have to be very, very precise on what the objectives of the legislation is. And there are concerns right now that the Climate Change Act of Malaysia will put more focus on market mechanisms, which we have pointed out in the paper that is found to be regressive even in developed countries. And Malaysia has to understand our developmental priorities as a developing country to set the approaches that we are going to put into a legislation. Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other countries that you have studied or looked at that have been either successful or, you know, failed, and then we can take lessons from that in terms of how their climate change legislation has worked for them?
Yes. So we have looked at around six countries in the paper, and from the cross-country examples that show most countries has used their climate change acts in setting the limits of carbon pollution, incentivizing decarbonization behavior, or establish roles and responsibilities of government agents in climate actions. But there are differences in how developed and developing countries approach their climate change acts as a whole. Their climate acts are usually based on their respective national circumstances. For example, countries like Philippines have laws that require local governments to set aside a certain budget for climate action. And countries like South Korea, their climate act is oriented more towards supporting green industrial development, as opposed to certain countries that in the West, like UK, like Australia, whose climate acts are usually used for setting up trading schemes, emissions trading schemes, and setting legally binding climate goals. And we recognize that developing countries need not follow in the footsteps of what the Northern narrative is going for, because we have other priorities in development, and we also have the right to assert our developmental priorities.
Right. So you reckon that in crafting a climate change act for Malaysia, we should not just focus on market mechanisms. We shouldn't just take templates from other countries, but develop them for a local context. Can I ask you very quickly, what do you think we should take into account when developing a comprehensive legislation for Malaysia?
So the things that we should be taking into account, first, equity. We should consider what sort of impact, what sort of distributional impact that each and every provisions can have for different groups. And we should also protect the most vulnerable, and also putting in provisions that is able to build resilience for those who are most vulnerable to climate change impact. We should also, especially in terms of setting up carbon taxes or emissions trading scheme, we should make sure that it does not entrench existing inequities to the most vulnerable group. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for speaking with me. That was Koo Wei Young from Kazana Research Institute. I'm going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about Malaysia's climate priorities. Our focus now shifts to the legislative landscape in Malaysia, where the awaited Climate Change Act seems to still be in the pipeline, slated for completion in the next 2 to 3 years, as per Minister Nik Nazmi Nik Ahmad. Now, can we afford to wait, considering the urgency of the global climate crisis? Should we take it slow to ensure precision, or is it time to expedite the process and enact the necessary measures? Joining me now to help us think this through is Qiu Jiayao, who is a sustainable development lawyer at Q&Co. He's also a fellow of the Academy of Sciences Malaysia. Jiayao, thank you so much for being on the show with me. I don't think there's a lot of public information readily available about what a Climate Change Act for Malaysia would entail. But what do you think are some of the elements that Malaysia should prioritise when we are crafting this climate change legislation? Are there any kind of key components that you think absolutely crucial for effective environment governance?
Hi, Melissa, and thanks for having me. I think this is, let's be clear, this is something we haven't done before, right? And the nature of the problem is something that is so nebulous, and plus we are contributing to the problem continuously, right? Through the ways in which we're producing all these goods and services that we need to support our lives and our lifestyles. So the laws that we have at the moment, they don't talk about climate change. The laws have been formulated over the years since independence, and so they do not have a lens on climate change as a thing. We have pieces of laws on regulating environmental pollution. We have laws and policies on energy use, energy production, on transport, on trade, and things like that. So I think to answer your question, I think Malaysia's Climate Change Act should be a framework legislation. Meaning to say, to take a holistic approach, because right now we have pieces of fragmented, think of it as Lego pieces, but they don't jive, right? So because they have been enacted, formulated in different parts of our history as a growing nation. So think of these Lego pieces as Duplo pieces, and then Lego town pieces, and then like technique pieces, right? So they are varying degrees of sophistication with different lenses of looking at our self-identity and where we are. So right. A holistic approach.
Okay, so I think I should probably backtrack here and ask you whether we actually need a Climate Change Act. Do we need one? Or is it better to just kind of change or revise some of the current laws to include a climate lens?
I think we definitely need a Climate Change Act, because without that, then there is no anchor for all the clever ideas that we will need across all the sectors, across all the aspects of Malaysia. What kind of sectors should we invest in? How should we go about in thinking about transportation? You know, so take for example, our pursuit of electric vehicles, for instance. Is it good to then promote take up of EVs, or is it also important simultaneously to have a bigger picture perspective on sustainable mobility, so that, hey, maybe we need less roads, and then necessarily so that we have less cars. So, you know, we need these broader perspectives, and that's what the Climate Change Act should have, although its job would be to combat climate change. But I think the framing is really important. It must be framed on sustainable development for a country, for Malaysia itself. And so we are very different. Well, we are very unique in the sense that we are a mega diverse biodiversity country. We are a oil and gas producing country. It contributes significantly to our economic wealth, to jobs. And so we must take these, and we are a post-colonial country, you know, and we should also appreciate that as Malaysians, our hopes and dreams might be different, and we need to have a common narrative in terms of how do we make sense of who we are and where we want to go.
Right.
And I speak about this in, you know, the kind of a cynical paradigm that some Malaysians might have, which is, you know, we're just here to, you know, in the pursuit of material wealth, accumulate for ourselves what we can, and then go somewhere better. You know, and so that narrative is also a really important foundation in which we talk about social institutions and then legal frameworks.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if we neglect our environmental and social history, which is part of our diverse identity, policy reforms alone, their implementation and their success will be limited.
So just drawing on what you've said, given that we have kind of our unique circumstances and our history and where we are in terms of what we put out, our contribution to global emissions, but also our own targets that we've set for the country, when we think about that, how do we craft legislation that is specific to Malaysia, bearing in mind all the common but differentiated approach, the equitable and just transition approach? Do we look at other countries and think about what applies here, or do we come up with an entirely new and unique model drafting a climate change act from scratch?
Maybe two parts, I guess. First is, yes, it does require looking at this challenge. It does require a huge bandwidth for complexity. There's a complexity in terms of Malaysia on the world stage, and that means how should strategically Malaysia as a country geopolitically engage with the global north in terms of historical injustices, in terms of the as you've mentioned, our common but differentiated responsibilities towards this problem, our right to development, and context, right? So bandwidth is really important. But there is one perspective, that's an international outward, you know, engaging perspective, engaging on a UNFCCC, you know, the COP28 COP coming up next year's, this year's COP29 type of, that in itself has its own history and its own trajectory. So that engagement on that platform, we need to have that cleverness. But domestically, as a country, from a governance perspective, between the ruling government, the state governments, the local governments, governing for and governing by Malaysians, you know, that is a different conversation. That's a different struggle as well. So what are the key, you know, you talked about what are some best practices from other jurisdictions. I think simplistically they are, you can see there's some countries that have pursued climate change laws from a more holistic perspective. So in the UK, for example, in the 2008 Climate Change Act, it's more of a framework type of law. So it covers more broadly. Some countries will then zoom in to specific pieces of intervention, like just a piece of law to set reduction targets on a sector-specific way on greenhouse gas. So New Zealand and some other countries. In fact, Sarawak has come up with their own legislation like that. So that's one angle, which is more focused. You know, a specific piece that facilitates and regulates carbon trading, for example. So that could be a specific piece. Yeah. So there are different approaches, but you know, for Malaysia, the necessary thing is we have to figuring out collectively, and I think public participation is really important. In getting this right, in setting right. This long-term trajectory.
So you mentioned that you think it should be more of a framework legislation. Is that the kind of approach that you hope the Climate Change Act will take?
Yes. Okay. Because if we don't have that, then what is unspoken, it will then dominate, or who has the loudest voice and who have the strongest lobbies. They can then end up dominating a particular kind of angle, and that would be quite unfortunate.
Right. So can I ask you, is a 2 to 3 year time frame one that is reasonable given the climate crisis? I think it's been a while. We've been talking about Climate Change Act in its many iterations for a while, so we're not starting from scratch. But it seems that there are so many complexities and intersecting laws and sectors that we have to consider, consultation with stakeholders, as you mentioned. So is 2 to 3 years, is that a good time frame to aim for? Should we be thinking about something shorter or even longer? What do you think?
I think 2 to 3 years, you know, to my ears at first instance, it of course came as a shock. But then considering if we are going to do it seriously and as a framework approach, then 2 to 3 years is definitely a very reasonable time. But the thing is, the work must start now, you see. And so we do wish to hear more in terms of what is the progress, what is the approach. That's really important, because we shouldn't pretend because, you know, as I opened with, this challenge is multifaceted, and the solutions necessarily need to be co-developed with different stakeholders. You know, gone is the era where government knows all and government does all. So I think here in this case, the federal government needs to approach this from a very participatory way, which is encouragingly they have done, right? So YB Nick Nazmi last year set up, for example, public consultation panels on the climate change for the private sector actors, as well as the non-profit NGOs, the third sector. So, and there has been, you know, and these panels have been used. So we look forward to how, you know, better mechanisms in which public engagement and so that all the cleverness can come together. Yeah.
Jiayao, thank you so much for speaking with me. That was sustainable development lawyer Q Jiayao, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching. Good night.